Hi, I'm Abby Moucher, and today we're going to talk about how you can overcome, your addiction to societal expectations. Now, my goal for this episode is that you'll be able to live a happier, healthier life that you want, without having all that burden of, oh, what do they expect? How do they perceive me? How am I acting like? All that, the way you see yourself, all those expectations, you want to put all of that down. Now, the objective for this, because if you're listening to this, then you're probably a business owner, you are a professional. And I want you to feel more comfortable talking about your mental health and to develop a healthy work-life balance, and a life that you actually love. There's no point having all these expectations on you if you don't like it. After all, you're the one in your skin. You're the one who knows how all of this feel. And if it doesn't feel good, if you don't love it, then nobody else will feel as hurt as you do. So let's talk about how we can overcome all of these expectations. Hi, welcome to the For Our Empire podcast. Now, in this podcast, we address the personal and the business issues that female entrepreneurs face in your day-to-day lives. My guest today is the lovely, the gorgeous. I love her mug, by the way, with the cat thingy. It's so cute. But my guest today is Catherine Burmeister. She's an author, a speaker, a coach, an attorney. She's everything you ever want. She's the whole package, basically.
Thank
Hi,
you so much for having me,
Catherine.
Abby. Thanks.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit more about, just introduce yourself a bit more before we jump into like what this addiction thing is.
For sure. So I always wanted to be a lawyer since probably middle school. Nobody in my family was, but the idea of standing up for just and unjust laws really spoke to me. So I set myself on that trajectory, went to law school, got my license, and I went to a really great practice. So it was a dream job. The partner had been working, doing this for 30 years. He really taught us by letting us do. So he let us learn it by actually doing. So about a year and a half after that job started, he actually took his life. He committed suicide. He had been stealing from clients for 8 years.
Holy bleeping ish. That was a plot twist. That was a plot twist. Oh my God.
I usually lead into it more, but that's the crux of it. So he and it was really hard to reconcile that, right? Because he had taught us well, he had taught us the right way, but then he had done something so obviously horrible, and we had to deal with the fallout from that. So myself, the senior associate, one paralegal, we decided to continue the firm, and we did that for about a year. And my new partners, the former senior associate at that time, he just had checked out mentally, physically. I was basically running the practice, and I had been operating on adrenaline for an entire year at that point, right? It
Yeah,
just
crush at
kept
some point.
going. Just
We had
kept
a crush
going.
at some point.
Yep, exactly. So that's what happened. Spoiler alert. I was halfway across the world in Portugal, actually, on a horseback riding trip, and I got a call from my paralegal asking me about an emergency decision I need to make for something that we could have a big issue for the firm. And I gave her permission to do it, and it hit me that she called me because my partner at that time was not, he wasn't responding to her. He knew I was going to be out of the country.
It's even a partner at
And
this point. It's like an employee that does nothing but gets paid.
that's it. That's exactly it. So he knew I was going to be out of the country. He should have responded. Like, this was a major issue that could cause us, to malpractice. And I get back to the country, and that Monday, it just all hit me. Like, I just could not process anything else. Couldn't make any other decisions about literally like what I was doing the next moment. So I called my husband home. I was having suicidal ideations at that point, and I called my husband home because I've been in therapy for a long time, thankfully, before this whole thing happened. And so I was aware enough to know, like, I'm not in a good place. I need to have somebody with me. So he came home and really helped me through that time. And then it was almost as if a switch had been flipped. The next morning, I was very clear about where I was, who I was, and what I was going to do. And it's like a lot of times in life, we know something's not good for us, right? Or we know we deserve better, but actually acting on it and believing that is something completely different. And overnight, that's what had happened. I actually believed that I deserved to set boundaries, that I shouldn't be taking this anymore. And when I wrote my book, Overcoming Addiction to the Status Quo, it really showed me that what I had done at that point and why it was so crucial and everything shifted, I had proven to myself that I was enough. And I've always suffered from the idea that I wasn't doing enough or being enough or I should be this way or shouldn't be that way. And that's what I talk about when I talk about the status quo is societal expectations and our own internal expectations that are brought on by society about who we should be, how we should be. And we're living up to this ideal that doesn't make us happy. And so that's really what shifted my entire perspective on life and allowed me to start my own legal practice, start me on the path of writing the book to help other professionals. And most recently, being open to the idea of shifting from practicing law as much to coaching and consulting other professionals to help them live, actually implement living a better quality of life.
Yeah. Oof. Okay, now I have a question. That wonderful partner of yours, where is he right now? I kind of want to punch him in the face.
He's still practicing law, believe it or not. A little bit. Yeah, I know.
Is he like actually there this time, or is just there in name only?
No, he's doing it this time because he doesn't have anybody else working for him. So he's having to do it at this point.
Ouch. Well, he cannot deserve it. I mean, I know he was at a bad point at that place, but so are you. What a jerk.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I used to, when I would, you know, speak to people, I'd almost give them a pass because that's the thing. I was taking on everybody's emotional burden too, because I think I had been in therapy for so long and I had, not that I was not operating on adrenaline and not affected, but I could process it a little bit better. So I was taking on my paralegal's emotions, my partner's emotions, my new partner's emotions, my client's emotions. And it's a lot. Yeah.
Well, you get parent to something.
Exactly. So I was there too, going through the same thing, and I managed not to, you know, just leave everybody hanging. So yeah, I agree with you. It was definitely a frustrating process.
Yeah. Oh my God. Like I understand that this was sort of rough for them, but they are professionals for a reason. Like if you couldn't handle it, you could have just quit the job. Like no one is forcing you to be there. You're not being held hostage.
I said that multiple times. Like, hey, let's, you know, I don't even care what the decision is. If it's we close shop.
But
like, let's make a decision. And I actually worked with him really hard to get to that point. Like I didn't want to walk away because I'd put so much effort into something.
Yeah, that.
And I never won my own practice. So this is the funny part from the business side. I never won my own business. I never won my own law practice. But after having the rug jerked out from underneath me a couple of times, I realized I couldn't go work for somebody else again.
Yeah.
So I wanted to keep it as amicable as possible. So I could take, in theory, I could have taken all of the cases because I had worked for them the entire year, but I didn't have the bandwidth to do that. So we ended it amicably. I took half the cases and started my own practice, which was huge. It's, you know, going out and starting with a bunch of clients, you know.
Yes. But you'd be doing that technically for them anyway. So you're good to go, honestly.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we ended it amicably, but it was definitely frustrating to feel like I was just pulling all the weight. So it's one of the best things in a weird way. I would never wish it on my worst enemy, but it's one of the best things that's happened to me in terms of shifting my life so early on. But yeah, that's my point. So when I talk about the status quo in my book, it's just the idea that you don't have to hit that point. You don't have to hit rock bottom before you start making changes to live a better quality life.
Yeah. Now you had like a very wild experience from your professor stealing for 8 wonderful years, try not to curse anymore, and then him killing himself, because whoa, that must be like a lot of mental pressure. Like I was literally being coached or taught by a criminal. Like I don't know how to put that delicately, like, because he's pretty much a criminal
and
I guess there's the way you see yourself. That do people around think you're a criminal as well? Did they think you were involved? Did they think you knew about it and you kept quiet? Like, there's like, ugh.
Yeah, it was a lot. So we immediately reached out to our governing body for the legal professions, our state bar association, and he had left notes. He left notes detailing what he did. So we, you know, were upfront, laid it all out. And they knew we didn't know because we didn't have access to any bank accounts. So there was just no way we could have done it. Anybody on the outside, though, I think they realized that in that traditional setup where you've got a partner and associates, the associates don't have access to the finances. So, and especially for somebody who's been practicing for 30 years, like,
there's no way you just came from NBL. Right.
But it was a very real concern of mine. And I was very worried that because my integrity, my authenticity, that's who I am. Mm-hmm. And I was just crushed with the idea. And then I finally did have to get to a point where it's like, I can't control what people are going to think.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this is becoming more and more common in our profession. So I think people are realizing more and more that it's isolated. Like, it's not a conspiracy where a bunch of people are doing it. It's like a one-off person that's doing it, and everybody else is just the fallout from it, unfortunately.
Yes. And like what you just said, like, about how you can't control what everyone else thinks. And logically, as adults, as professionals, we know logically that I can't control everything. But we're still trying to control everything.
Yeah, it's really hard to do because, I mean, I think, like you said in the very beginning, like we're our own worst critic, basically. Like, we don't want anybody to think less of us, and we're always going to think the worst of us, right? So it's hard. It's really hard to let that go. But I think when you delve down into, okay, if I don't let this go, I'm going to be forced to, either my body or my brain, something's going to crash. And even if it doesn't, even by some miraculous thing happens and you don't get to that point, you're going to be on your deathbed and you're never going to say, wow, I really wish I cared more about what people thought about me. You know,
you're
never going to be there. No. So you're always going to say, wow, I wish I lived my life doing what I really am passionate about or what I enjoy or fostering those relationships. So that's the alternative. You continue living this life where you're dedicated to people you don't even know, right? Societal expectations, your own self-imposed limitations and expectations, or you shift it and make a very conscious effort to let things go. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's not a one step and you're done type thing. Yeah. It's an ongoing process, but it's so incredibly worth it at the end of the day that I feel like you have to take that chance, or else you are going to be at the end of your life and just, it's too late then.
There's this other thing you had mentioned, it's like a self-hypocrisy of sort. Like, because for your employees, you were so compassionate towards them. You understood the mental process. And as female entrepreneurs, like when we say, I'm that woman, even online, like saying I'm so stressed out, whatever, we are quick to console them. But then we don't really do the same for ourselves. We are like all our love to everybody and say all these words, and we mean it to them. When it comes to us, it's like a blind spot of sorts.
It really is. And I think it's, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what happens. I would never be the way I am to myself, to other people. That's not who I am. And I think we have these unrealistic expectations that we should somehow be perfect. And that's one of the concepts I do talk about in my book, is the idea that perfection it's impossible, scientifically impossible. So aside from the fact that it's subjective, right? Based on everybody's opinion.
Yeah, like your perfect is not my perfect.
Yeah, but even from a scientific level, it's impossible. So if you accept that, you realize that you're not going to be perfect. And you realize that that's okay. Like, that's part of this experience. And I think our generation, especially in the United States, is very focused on everybody's a winner. Everybody got a participation trophy. And we never learned how to cope with adversity or challenges. Like, I was at the very end of the generation where we still like had those challenges, but you know, the generation after me, they don't know how. And so they can't encounter challenges in a healthy way, in a growth mindset kind of way. It's very fixed. And if they are uncomfortable, they just don't do it. And so, I mean, that's really their parents' problem for instilling that. But now we've got people that have to cope with it. And to cope with it, you have to embrace adversity and challenges in a healthy way. It's not going to be rainbows and kittens. I got it. It's not going to be easy, but it's worth learning how to embrace that so you can encounter life in a positive way to the extent that you can.
That makes sense. Now, but how we call this an addiction?
Yeah. So I don't use the word addiction flippantly. I genuinely believe it is, because I think it leads to, in fact, so many other addictions to, you know, drugs, alcohol, you know, fill in the blank. Because people do those things because they're forcing themselves to keep up with societal expectations and their self-imposed expectations. So we cannot let it go. To our own detriment, we will hold on to doing things that are bad for us and to keep up with the status quo. And that's the addiction part of it. That's the not letting it go and making bad decisions that repeatedly affect you negatively. just to try and keep up with this. And then when you start making bad decisions, you consequently make other bad decisions. If you're stressed out, if you can't get past processing what you're doing, you turn to alcohol, you turn to drugs, you know, you steal money. It just all spirals. And so I genuinely believe it is an addiction, because in what other situation would anybody ever do those horrible things themselves over and over again? And that's an addiction.
You have a point. Like if you take a step back and you're like, am I a masochist or something? Like, literally, why am I doing this to myself constantly?
Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, and if you might know, again, you know, it's not good for you. And I'm sure alcoholics, they know it's not good for them.
I have a friend who has told me, don't drink. But like, why you drink it? Like, it's not so good. But that's why you drink it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, it's not good and you still do it. And you keep doing it to yourself. And that's what it is. It's just a more existential idea of an addiction as opposed to just alcohol. And I'm not making light of it. It just, it's harder to attack, I think, because it's not
very tangible.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to, you know, avoid one thing. It's like, no, life. Life encompasses.
And really avoid life.
Yeah. It's so hard.
Yeah. So now let's bring it to like to the work-life balance of sort. Now, how do we tie this ridiculous, well, that's what it is, expectations of others, and then bring it to our work and to our life and finding that balance?
Yeah. So first, I think we have to understand it's not going to be 50-50 or, you know, 33-33-33 every single day of the week. Okay. It's not possible. But to the extent that you carve out time for what you're passionate about, what your business is, what your family life is, and for yourself, I think that's crucial too. That's the goal. So just making dedicated time for those things. So what you have to do is first and foremost, realize you're never going to get everything done. As a business owner, especially, you're never going to get everything done. Okay. So you could work nonstop and it still wouldn't be done. So you have to let that go. You have to set a boundary. And that's one of the biggest things I push, are setting boundaries personally, professionally. Just that's going to be what lends itself to setting the path for you for having that work-life balance. Because if you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it for you.
Do it. Yeah.
No, I mean, it doesn't matter how much your family loves you. They're not going to say, wow, you really should, you know, spend this much time working or spend this much time with us. Like, you have to do it. So setting that time limit on what you do and cutting it off. And it takes discipline. It's really
hard. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
But at the end, again, like I say, the alternative is so much worse. That you have to look at taking baby steps. So if it means, you know, setting a timer and stopping when that timer goes off, or setting a goal of getting three personal things done and three business things done today, and then calling it quits, or saying, I'm not going to check my email for the weekend, because really I have this other method that's putting things in perspective for me. And it seems maybe drastic, but it's helped me.
tell me.
Yes. So the first question is, is anybody going to die?
Oh my God.
Yeah, seriously. But seriously, 99.999% of the time, the answer
is no.
Okay? It's no. Second question, is there anything I can do about it? And if there is, do it. And if there isn't, let it go. If you can do something about it, there's no need to worry. And if you can't do anything about it, there's no need
to
worry.
It's not my fault.
But it's so hard for us to let go of things that we feel like we can't control. And we still cling on to holding on to that. So really saying, okay, if this is outside my control, I've got to let it go. And that really puts things in perspective and allows you to say, okay, I'm not going to check my email this weekend. Well, what happens if I don't? People get responses later.
I guess more emails to open on Monday.
Right. Nobody died. And is there anything we can do about it right now? Yeah, we're making a decision to put it on Monday because we care about these relationships that we have with ourselves and our family and friends. Yeah. So we are going to be the ones out of the backstop for it. But setting the boundaries is what you have to do. Because I can tell you, how many people have you seen work their entire lives? They overextend themselves and, you know, they 80s, 90s, whatever, they're doing their jobs. They never say again, wow, I wish I worked more. They say, I wish I had time. So you always have to think about the alternative, and we can't ever get back that time. We all have to pay our bills. We all have to get basics, you know, taken care of, but we have to make sure for our own benefit that we take care of our personal and professional and, you know, that balance between all of it to make ourselves a whole person, I feel like.
I have a question, although I think your question is more for my benefit than anyone listening to this, but it's a valid question. I have you here after this access question. So I used to have this thing where I'd be so focused on work that I'd forget to eat. I'm working on that. I used to have an eating problem, but it's almost fixed, pretty much fixed. And then, but then I think this is August. So in June, I think I was working. And then I looked at that time, it was 2 a.m. And then I had no idea how it went. And it's kind of cold. And, and when I look at the time, I realize it's really cold right now. I had not felt the cold the entire time. And so what happens if you like, this is something you love so much, like it just, it's you love this so much that time just sort of flies away. And then you forget that you're hungry, that you're cold and time is gone. But like, you're just so absorbed in this thing.
Yeah, and then that's the thing, like, right, we can justify it to ourselves so much better if it's something we enjoy doing. But again, you have to set limits. So what I do, I have the iWatch now, and that will buzz me to like, hey, get up and walk around. Or you can even set a timer on your phone to every 2 or 3 hours, you know, go off and say, oh, okay, like, what am I, you know, what am I doing? I've got to eat. I've got to go to the bathroom, you know, basic things like that. But yeah, that's what you have to do, is really you have to be the backstop for yourself and put those things in proactively. Because like you said, if you just keep going, especially something that you're passionate about or you enjoy doing, you'll get tunnel vision and you won't focus on anything else.
I just got so into it, like everything is okay. I was so in the zone, basically.
And it's not inherently a bad thing, but especially if you find it doing it multiple times and to the, you know, detriment of your health, obviously you've got to start putting things in place that help you, you know, not do that in the future.
And are there like tools you use to, like, I know you've talked about Apple Watch, you use to like start working. So say if someone listening to this and they don't have an Apple Watch, what tool can they use to, like, I don't know, maybe set reminders, maybe have an alarm go up, but sort of remind you that you've been staring at this computer for so freaking long. Get out.
Absolutely. So yeah, there's free apps on your computer you can use, on your phone. Set a timer, set like a basic kitchen timer for, you know, 90 minutes. Or I think there's also a lot of techniques that like have you work for, what is it, 30, take 10 minutes or 50.
Oh, the Pomodoro thing, like
that one. Yeah. There's a lot of techniques out there, and find what works for you, play with them. And if it's just a, I'm going to walk around my house literally 3 times and then come sit back down, that's still, you've got to do that to your brain. Your brain is not meant to work, you know, that long, that focused, because you're just going to burn yourself out. Again, even if you're not choosing to stop, your brain is going to make you stop at some point.
And are you still an attorney, by the way?
Do what?
Are you still like an attorney? Do you still practice law?
I do still practice law. I actually have a full practice, and I'm trying to pull back a little on that to push forward on my coaching and consulting. But yeah, I do still practice. So I represent individuals that have been hurt because of somebody else's negligence, basically. So dog bite cases, tractor trailer cases, slip and falls. I have a pediatric dental malpractice case. It really runs the gamut. I like to have a variety from a business standpoint. I like to have the different size cases, but then also from a personal standpoint, it's interesting to me. So I love practicing law, and I don't want to give that up. I am being open to the idea of where this coaching and consulting takes me. So I'm accepting my own medicine. But I have to say that within the past year, especially, it's been really difficult, in personal injury in particular, is what I do. I don't have control over a lot. So I'm going against insurance companies. The court system may take longer. The insurance companies don't want to pay out. My clients. There's a lot outside of what I do.
The control is there.
So what happens as a result is I become the proverbial whipping boy for people. Is I'm the reason that this is happening. Even though I tell them it's not me and I explain why this is happening, I take the brunt of it. And that's just part of the job to a degree. But then it's started to wear on me a lot recently. Especially I had a case recently where I reduced my costs and fees to put money in his pocket, because that's my goal. Like, I get their bills covered and reduced, and then I want to put a little something in their pocket because they've had to go through this, right? And I told him that, you know, I outlined it. It wasn't like I needed a you know, gold sticker, you know, to say, hey, good job. But I just wanted them to know that this is how this broke down, because they have to see it. And the first words out of his mouth were, wow, that's all I get? And I was like,
I'm giving this to you.
Yep.
It's a gift.
That's it. That's it. Like, and I'm not going to say, you know, it's not. I'm not going to convince that person. But I've had a few of those instances back to back, and it's just really starting to wear on me. So yeah. I think shifting to working with, in my case, other attorneys that are very, that I can control that relationship, at least it's less external factors that are wearing on me at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So
what a dick. I get from his perspective that he wants my money, but the other hand, I am literally giving this to you, and you're like, that's all I get. Like, okay, fine, you get zero then. Fine.
That's what I kind of wanted to say. It's tough. Like, people have this idea of like, being entitled. Exactly. Entitlement, I think, is a huge problem. And no matter how much I try to manage expectations, it's, you're not going to manage everybody's. And, but it doesn't mean I have to sit there and take that all the time. So if I can pull back a little bit on my practice and be very selective about the clients and the cases I work on, then I can push forward on the other brand in my business. So that, that balances it out at the end of the day, I think.
Yeah. And then as a coach, do you like, is your coaching practice sort of tied to your law practice?
No, not at all. So I've been focusing not just on working with lawyers. It's just, that's what I know. So it makes sense to do that. Helping lawyers figure out where, first of all, who they are, because I think a lot of times people don't even think about what matters to them. What do they want out of life? What are their values? We just keep going and going. And then finally come to a point where, like I said, either our body forces us or we have a major life event that, you know, we go, oh my God, I'm not happy. Why not? So I help people figure out where they are, where they want to be, and then tackling a few key parts of their life. So imposter syndrome, setting boundaries. I have a whole list of things that I work on with people, but the basis for that, that foundation is the same for everybody. Where are you, where you want to be, and then kind of creating what I like to call like a little human startup. So focusing on mission, vision, and values like you would for a company on, but on a human level. So if you don't know who you are or where you've been or where you're going, it's good to have those boundaries of like, okay, here's my core values. Here's where I want to be. And here's where I am right now. So when you start making decisions, it's easier. You have parameters like, okay, this working at this job doesn't align with my values. I need to find another job or change what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So it gives you people parameters to work within instead of just saying go out and be happy, because if it were that easy we all would be doing
that, right? Like what does happiness even mean in the like describe happiness, define it
exactly. And I would say happiness is living the best version of yourself, but you've got to know yourself before you can start living that way. So that's my goal, is setting that foundation, then helping people tackle specific issues that they've been struggling with. And so it's separate, completely separate from my law practice in that regard.
That makes sense. Okay, so now I can see like an activity in the form that says how to take inventory of how stressed out you are, and then how they work if they take time to celebrate their wins. So let's talk about the taking inventory of how stressed out you are, because typically when you're very stressed out, you probably like feel that migraine, you feel your brain sort of shutting down. Before we get to that point though, is there a way to like okay, am I stressed out right now? How do I like take those steps?
Yeah. So one of the, and it's different for everybody, but one of the things I start to notice is I'm not being productive. I'm looking at other things on my computer. I'm looking at my phone. Like I start distracting myself subconsciously. So I know instead of trying to push through it, instead of just saying, okay, I'm going to close all my tabs and focus on this work, my brain's doing it for some reason, right?
Oh.
So instead of pushing through it, take 5, 10, 15 minutes and do something completely different. If it is like a game on your phone, that's fine. But, you know, dedicate that time to resetting yourself and then come back. So instead of forcing yourself, because you're wasting time, right? From a very practical standpoint, you're wasting time forcing yourself because you're not being productive.
You have so much idea.
So instead, take time away in a purposeful way and redirect your energy and then come back to it. And often that's what helps me, you know, refocus. Headaches are a big one, but I get allergies too. So half the time, I don't know if it's allergies or if it's stress, but getting up and walking around. And it's like a lot of things in life. It's, you know, being proactive about, we are about our physical health, or we're more aware of it with our physical health. We have to do the same thing for our mental health. You can't wait until you're at a point where you're having major issues, or for me, like it was suicidal ideations. That's not the time to start worrying about it. Worry about it well before that, so you can avoid that to the extent that you can.
Yeah. The thing about mental health that I know, the general public is being more conscious about mental health, but I've seen it's more on like the extreme side, like suicide ideation or depression. Like an entire journey before you get to that far end.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's one of the biggest things that I talk about is, I think people who haven't been in tune with themselves, that's what they think, right? Because we'll have this conversation about like, oh, if someone you know is, you know, suicidal, let them know there's help. Well, great. But if somebody's really, right. I mean, like if they're really dedicated to that path, they're not going to let anybody know. So really what it should be is, like you said, focus on the before part. You don't have to have a formal diagnosis of anxiety or depression or anything like that to be proactive about your mental health. The reality is we all deal with stress. If you're a human, you deal with stress. It's just nowadays, as opposed to primitive days, our stressors are completely different. We don't have typically wild animals coming to attack us. So we almost like, we perceive stress in a very different way. And it's difficult. It's not something with razor sharp teeth. It's the amount of work we have to get done. So identifying what our stressors are, identifying the fact that they have an impact on us, and then being proactive about managing that is how you prevent yourself from getting to that point. Because I don't care how awesome you are, you're going to get to a point, like I said, where your body and mind shut down for you.
Yeah.
So being aware of yourself and where you are and taking breaks, it's not a weakness. It's a huge asset, a huge benefit, because you are maximizing yourself as a human being. I mean, personally and professionally, right?
Yeah.
So it's a spectrum. Stress is a spectrum. Anxiety is a spectrum. Depression is a spectrum. You don't have to be at this far end of it to benefit from being proactive. And at the end of the day, why wouldn't you? You live a better quality of life. And no matter what you believe, spiritually, religiously, we know what we have now. We know that we may not be happy, and we have the potential to be happier. And quite frankly, we don't know when our time will come, right? It could be next week. It could be 30 years.
That's so morbid idea.
But it's so true. You don't know. And again, like we all have basic things we have to do, right? We have to pay the bills, but you can have a balance, and it doesn't have to be, I'm going to work for 40 years, save all this money, and then do something.
Yeah.
By that point, who knows if you're going to be here, right?
Also, let's even know how your expenses are going to be like during those 4 years.
Yeah, exactly. Where I see so many people in my profession, they'll save all this money and then they can never enjoy it because much. So it doesn't make sense. I think after a certain point, after basic needs are met, money in and of itself doesn't bring happiness. Things you can do with money, I would argue, yes, you can have experiences that make you happy. But if you aren't happy with yourself as an individual, it doesn't matter what you have on top of your basic needs being met. Yeah. You're not going to be a happy person in the long run.
And I know most of the people listening to this podcast are typically female entrepreneurs in the starting phase. Now, most of them, this is their side hustle, and they have a full-time job. Now, the problem with having a job is that you don't really control this whole, I'm going to come back. Like, just thinking about from my at work right now, I know, like most of my employees, I only go to the office once a day. And like when we recorded, our finance manager had called, and I just like put it on mute, and I could ignore her till tomorrow. Now I know not everyone in the office has that option, and those people are actually still working right now, even though it's 6 p.m. and it's way past working hours. So I know we've talked about how walk around, you realize your stresses, but if you are at a point where that you have like deadlines and your boss is breathing down your neck, whether physically or via emails or calls, and you know you are stressed, you're like, you definitely want to give this up. So what do I do? Like, what's the realistic way of handling this?
Yeah. So, and I fully appreciate that, because I've been in those jobs that you don't have any control. And especially, like you said, for people who are pushing forward with their own business, like you're working two full-time jobs. I do appreciate that. So what you can do, I know it sounds silly. If you're at an office, I don't know how many people are in offices right now, but go to the bathroom and literally take 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Who is going to come in the bathroom and be like, you're taking too long?
are you timing me?
Right, exactly. Take time in the bathroom. Or if you have the ability to walk around an office building, you know, taking the stairs, do that. You don't have to be sitting at your desk. And if anybody's telling you you have to sit at your desk, I mean, find a way to be staring at your screen and spacing out at the same time for 15 minutes to take a break. But I mean, at that point, I would argue maybe reevaluating where you are in your job.
You remind me that.
and looking at other options. I'm not saying quit your job and don't have a plan. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, looking at
ways. Look at some more jobs.
Exactly. And I appreciate. So I don't have as much of a balance right now because I'm trying to push forward with my coaching and consulting business. But I still make a point of setting time aside just for myself. Again, you're never going to get everything done. This past weekend, I took a long weekend in the mountains at my parents' cabin. So I was going to work, as I often have the intention of doing, and I just closed the laptop and hung out with some girlfriends. So if you have the option on the weekends to say you want to get work done for your personal business and your side hustle, work on Saturday, maybe even Sunday morning, and then cut it off for the rest of Sunday. But I find you have to set those time frames early on. If you don't put it on early, you're just going to keep going and justifying
I want to take today off.
I'm on a really good roll. I should keep going. Or I've got this project I want to get done, this one thing.
Yeah.
Set a hard cutoff and stop. You've got to stop. You're not going to be able to live with your life as a, you know, an entrepreneur, if you don't take care of yourself, and nobody else is going to help you do that. I always say you've got to put your mask on first before you put your mask on somebody else. Like when you fly on a plane,
yeah, the airline thing.
And that's what you've got to do. You've got to take care of yourself. But yeah, make sure you get creative with the ways that you step away from your, if you have a dedicated, you know, job where people are dictating what you have to do, take time. Don't, you know, if you have the ability to actually take a lunch break, go take a lunch break, step away from your desk. Don't keep working while you eat. Cause I'm guilty of that. I have to admit, take 30 minutes, 15 minutes to eat, 15 minutes to walk around. But seriously, if you have to hide out in the bathroom to get your time away from your desk, because you're not being productive after a certain point, if you're just forcing yourself to go through something.
Yeah. Okay. Those are like pretty much all my questions, but let's talk about your book and how someone can actually get the book, because you have referenced it several times. So let's talk about your book.
Yeah. So Overcoming Addiction to the Status Quo. It's on Amazon, but you can also find me on my website, Catherine F. Burmeister. I'm sure you'll spell that out for people.
Yes, I will.
I'm on Linktree too. So KF Burmeister. And Linktree takes you to all my social media. It takes you to my website, my law site. It takes you to Amazon. So yeah, okay. That's all the places you can connect with. Yeah. And I'll even say if the first person that reaches out to me and, you know, mentions this podcast, I'm happy to send a copy of the book to them. So
Yay. Mention it to her so we get a free copy. Are there any questions that I should have asked, but maybe I didn't think about it?
No, you did a great job. You really did. You cover a lot of things that I would have covered normally. So, and I'm a lawyer. I'll talk as long as you let me talk. So you did a great job.
Yay! Thanks. So that's Catherine Burmeister. You're going to have the Linktree link in the description, which will lead to the Amazon store, to her website, to the law practice. So everything's going to be there. And so we've learned a lot about this, but I want you to know that this expectation you have, it's like, okay, so you met all these expectations. What exactly do you get out of it? Like nothing, just another more expectations. Then next time you're like, let's beat this. You're putting yourself or like, you're climbing these stairs that's only going to lead to more frustration and depression. So take time off. If you're at a point where you cannot take that time off, like literally, like you said, go to the bathroom, take a lunch break, or take a bathroom break. If your boss is going to be timing the time you spend in the washroom, you might want to reconsider that as your job, to be honest. That's quite creepy.
I agree. That's a problem.
Yeah. So that's it today for overcoming the addiction to societal expectations. I hope you've learned a lot. I hope something about today's episode really stuck to you. And I hope that you don't just listen to it and think, oh, sounds good that you do nothing. But take that time off. Think of your mental health. Think of your physical health. Realize that at some point, your brain is just has just checked out. You're doing the action, but nothing is really happening. So might as well enjoy that time and take an actual time off. So once again, our guest was Catherine Burmeister, and it was so awesome having you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Abby. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Wait, how do you end this thing?